Blog Talk Radio.
Podcast land. This is the Hodge to Hodge podcast on Block Talk Radio. This is the Messenger Edition. I am Nurse Carmen, and we have co-producers Ken and Ron Hodge. And thank you for tuning in and missing being here with you guys. It's nice to be back. And now we will have a conversation with the Messenger, Ron Hodge.
Good evening, and thank you, Nurse Carmen, for that lovely introduction. And, of course, it is truly a pleasure to be back before you, speaking and discussing what a mighty God we are. You know, there is an Eastern mystical teaching surrounding a doctrine called the Kama Loka. Now, according to this teaching, at the time of our death, each person is given the opportunity to relive every thought ever entertained, every word ever spoken, every action ever taken. Not from our standpoint, from the standpoint of the other person affected. In other words, we're already experiencing what we felt, thinking, saying, and doing what we did. Now we're given the experience of feeling what the other person felt in each of those moments. And it is this measure that will decide whether we think, say, or do these things again. Now, what occurs in your life after this is far too extraordinary to describe here in terms any of us would comprehend. Because the experience in another dimensional and literally defies description using tools as severely limited as words. It is enough to say that you will have the opportunity to review again this, your present life, without pain or fear or judgment, for the purpose of deciding how you feel about your experience here and where you want to go from there. Many will decide to come back here, to return to this world of density and relativity for another chance to experience out the decisions and choices you make about yourself at this level. Others will select you will return with a different mission. You will return to density and matter for the sole purpose of bringing others out of density and matter. Always there are on the earth those among you who have made such a choice. You can tell them apart at once. Their work is finished. They have returned to earth simply and merely to help others. This is their joy. This is their exultation. They seek naught but to be of service. You cannot miss these people. They are everywhere. There are more of them than you think. Chances are you know one or know of one. And if you're saying to yourself, am I one? Then I have to tell you, no. If you have to ask, you know you are not one. One such as this asks questions of no one. There is nothing to ask. But can I always hope for more? And I tell you, yes, you will. Yes, and you will. Always you will hope for more. It is in your nature. It is divine nature to seek always to be more.
Hello.
So seek, yes. Yes. Hello? Hello? So seek, yes. By all means, seek. Now, I want to answer definitively the question with which we started this conversation of our ongoing conversation. Go ahead and do what you really love to do. Do nothing else. You have so little time. How can you think of wasting a moment doing something for a living you don't like to do? What kind of a living is that? This is not living, this is dying. But if you say, but I have others who depend on me, little mouths to feed, a spouse who is looking to me, then God will answer. If you insist that your life is about what your body is doing, you do not understand why you came here. At least do something that pleases you, that speaks of who you are. Then at least you can stay out of resentment and anger towards those you imagine are keeping you away from your joy. What your body is doing is not to be discounted. It is important, but not in the way that you think. The actions of the body were meant to be reflections of a state of being, not attempts to attain a state of being. In the true order of things, one does not do something in order to be happy. One is happy and hence does something. One does not do some things in order to be compassionate. One is compassionate and hence acts in a certain way. The soul's decision precedes the body's action in a highly conscious person. Only an unconscious person attempts to produce a state of the soul through something the body is doing. This is what is meant by that statement. Your life is not about what your body is doing. Yet it is true that what your body is doing is a reflection of what your life is about. It is another divine dichotomy. Yet, know this if you understand nothing else. You have a right to your joy. Children or no children, spouse or no spouse, seek it, find it. and you will have a joyful family, no matter how much money you make or don't make. And if they aren't joyful and they get up and leave you, then release them with love to seek their joy. If, on the other hand, you have evolved to the point where things of the body are not of concern to you, then you are even more free to speak your joy, to seek your joy. On earth as it is in heaven, God says it's okay to be happy. Yes, even happy in your work. If, on the other hand, you have evolved to the point where things of the body are not of concern to you, your life work is a statement of who you are. If it is not, then why are you doing it? Do you imagine that you have to? You don't have to do anything. If man who supports his family at all costs, even his own happiness, is who you are, then love your work, because it is facilitating your creation of a living statement of self. If woman who seeks a job she hates in order to meet responsibilities as she sees them is who you are, then love your job, for it totally supports your self-image, your self-concept. Everyone can love everything the moment they understand what they are doing and why. No one does anything he doesn't want to do. Now, first, let's get one thing straight. You love them, most of them anyway. You use them admirably to feel sorry for yourself and to get attention. On the few occasions when you haven't loved them, it's only because they've gone too far, farther than you thought they would have when you created them. And what I'm referring to is, the question is, how can I solve some of the health problems I face? I have been the victim of enough chronic problems to last 3 lifetimes. Why am I having them now in this lifetime? And then I say, first, let's get one thing straight. You love them, most of them anyway. You use them admirably to feel sorry for yourself and to get attention for yourself. On the few occasions when you haven't loved them, it's only because they've gotten too far, farther than you thought they would have when you created them. Now, let's understand what you probably, already know. All illnesses is self-created. Even conventional medical doctors are now seeing how people make themselves sick. Most people do it quite unconsciously. They don't even know what they're doing. So when they get sick, they don't know what hit them. It feels as though something has befallen them rather than that they did something to themselves. This occurs because most people move through life not simply health issues and consequences unconsciously. People smoke and wonder why they get cancer. People ingest animals and fat and wonder why they get blocked arteries. People stay angry all their lives and wonder why they get heart attacks. People compete with others mercifully and under incredible stress and wonder why they have strokes. The not-so-obvious truth is that most people worry themselves to death. Worry is just about the worst form of mental activity there is, next to hate, which is deeply self-destructive. Worry is pointless. It is wasted mental energy. It also creates biochemical reactions which harm the body, producing everything from indigestion to coronary arrest and a multitude of things in between. Health will improve almost at once when worrying ends. Worry is the activity of the mind which does not understand it's connected with God. Hate is the most severe damaging mental condition. It poisons the body and it affects are virtually irreversible. Fear is the opposite of everything you are, and so has an effect of opposition to your mental and physical health. Fear is worry magnified. Worry, hate, fear, together with their offshoots, anxiety, bitterness, impatience, unkindness, judgmentalness, and condemnation all attack the body at the cellular level. It is impossible to have a healthy body under these conditions. Similarly, there, although to a somewhat lesser degree, conceit, self-indulgence, and greed leads to physical illness or lack of well-being. All illnesses is created first in the mind. So then you say, how can that be? What of conditions contracted from others, colds, or for that matter, AIDS? Nothing occurs in your life, nothing which is not first a thought. Thoughts are like magnets drawing effects to you. The thought may not always be obvious and thus clearly conservative, as in, I'm going to contract a terrible disease. The thought may be, and usually is, far more subtle than that. I'm not worthy to live. My life is always a mess. I'm a loser. God is going to punish me. I'm sick and tired of my life. Thoughts are very subtle, yet extremely powerful forms of energy. Words are less subtle, more dense. Actions are the most dense of all. Action is energy in heavy physical form, in heavy motion. When you think, say, and act out a negative concept, such as, I am a loser, you place tremendous creative energy into motion. Small wonder you come down with a cold. That would be the least of it. It is very difficult to reverse the effects of negative thinking once they have taken physical form. Not impossible, but very difficult. It takes an act of extreme faith. It requires an extraordinary belief in the positive force of the universe, whether you call that God, Godness, the unmoved mover, prime force, first cause, or whatever. Healers have such faith. It is a faith that crosses over into absolute knowing. They know that you are meant to be whole, complete, and perfect in this moment now. This knowingness is also a thought, and a very powerful one. It has the power to move mountains, to say nothing of molecules in your body. This is why healers can heal over even a distance. Thought knows no distance. Thought travels around the world and traverses the universe faster than you can say the word. But say the word and my servant shall be healed. And it was so. And that same self-same hour, even before his sentence was finished, such was the faith of the centurion. Yet you all are mental leopards. Your mind is eating away with negative thoughts. Some of these are thrust upon you. Many of these you actually make up, conjure up yourselves, and then harbor and entertain for hours, days, weeks, months, and even years. And you wonder why you are sick. You can solve some of the health problems, as you put it, by solving the problems in your thinking. Yes, you can heal some of the conditions you have already acquired, given yourself, as well as prevent major new problems from developing. And you can do this all by changing your thinking. Also, and I hate to suggest this because it sounds too mundane coming, as it were, but you've got to take better care of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You take rotten care of your body, paying it little attention at all until you suspect something's going wrong with it. You do virtually nothing in the wake of preventive maintenance. You take better care of your cars than you do of your body. And that's not saying much. Not only do you fail to prevent breakdowns with regular checkups once a year or physicals and use the therapy and medicine you've been given, why do you go to the doctor, get her help, and then not use the remedies she suggests? Can you answer me that one? You also treat your body terribly between these visits, about which you do nothing. You do not exercise, so it grows flabby, and worse yet, weak from non-use. You do not nourish it properly, thereby weakening it further. Then you fill it with toxins and poisons, and the most observed substance posing as foods, and still it runs for you. This marvelous energy, still it chugs along, bravely pushing on in the face of this onslaught. It's horrible. The conditions under which you ask your body to survive are horrible, but you do little or nothing about them. You will hear this, nod your head in regretful agreement, and go right back to the mistreatment. And do you know why? Because you have no will to live. Now, it's not meant to be harsh, nor is it meant to be an indictment. Harsh is a relative term, a judgment you have laid on the words. Indictment can connote guilt, and guilt connotes wrongdoing. There is no wrongdoing involved here, hence no guilt and no indictment. I have made a simple statement of truth. Like all statements of truth, it has the quality of waking you up. Some people don't like to be awakened. Most do not. Most would rather sleep. The world is in the condition that it is in because the world is full of sleepwalkers. With regards to my statement, what about it seems untrue? You have no will to live. At least you have had none until now. If you tell me you've had an instant conversion, I will reassess my prediction of what you will now do. I acknowledge that my prediction is based on past experience. It was also meant to wake you up. Sometimes when a person is really deeply asleep, you have to shake them a little. I have seen in the past that you've had very little will to live. Now, you may deny that, but in the case, your action speaks louder than your words. If you ever lit a cigarette in your life, much less smoked a pack a day for 20 years, as I have, you have very little will to live. You don't care about what you do to your body. only after 20 years of grueling physical punishment. And if you've ever taken alcohol into your body, you have very little will to live. And then you may say, well, I drink very moderately. The body was not meant to intake alcohol. It impairs the mind. But then you may say, but Jesus took alcohol. He went to the wedding, turned water into wine. And then I say to you, the same thing I've been saying to you all along. Who says Jesus was perfect? The body can more easily overcome from only moderate abuse. The saying is therefore useful. Nevertheless, I'll stick to my original statement. The body was not meant to intake alcohol. But then you will say, well, some medicines can contain alcohol. I have no control over what you call medicine. So I'm going to stay with the body was not designed for alcohol. Look, truth is truth. Now, if someone said, a little alcohol won't hurt you, and place that statement in the context of life as you now live it, I would have to agree with them. That does not change the truth of what I said. It simply allows you to ignore it. Yet consider this. Currently, we as humans wear our bodies out. Typically within 50 to 80 years. Some last longer, but not many. Some stop functioning sooner, but not the majority. Can we agree on that?
Yes, we could agree on that.
All right. So we have a good starting point for the discussion. Now what I say, I could agree with the statement, a little alcohol won't hurt you. I qualify that by adding, in the context of life as you now live it. You see, people seem satisfied with life as you now live it. But life, it may surprise you to learn, was meant to be lived at a whole different way. And your body was designed to last a great deal longer. Then you might say, how much longer? Infinitely longer. You say, what does that mean? It means your body was designed to last forever.
Okay.
You mean we are never supposed to die? And then I say, you never do die. Life is eternal. You are immortal. You never do die. You simply change form. You didn't even have to do that. You decided to do that. God didn't. God made your bodies that would last forever. Do you really think the best God could do, the best God could come up with, is a body that could make it 6 to 7 years before falling apart? Is that? Do you imagine that's the limit of God's ability? See, this is what we have to understand when we start understanding just how great God is. God designed your magnificent body to last forever. And the earliest of you and earliest of us did live in the body virtually pain-free and without fear of what you now call death. In your religious mythologies, you symbolize your cellular memory of these first version humans by calling them Adam and Eve. Actually, of course, there were more than two. But I thank you for coming back It's a pleasure to be back on. We'll be back here Sunday night, 9 o'clock. And I do apologize for our missed time off, but it just got me more fired up that we can go stronger in our conversations, understanding just who we truly are. I thank you all. Thank you so much, Nurse Carmen, for tuning in tonight. And I look forward to another conversation on Sunday night. God bless you, and I'll talk to you then.
Thank you. Same to you. Bye-bye.
Good night.